Yeah, lighting up the world. Peter Himmelman and David Broza. And this is Carol Newman, and I'm here for Arts Live and Local in the parking lot at KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook. So glad to be here with you. I want to send this out to all people in need of healing, and that would be just about all of us, and especially yesterday, and the mics are open. Yesterday was Human Rights Day, 1948, Eleanor Roosevelt, the Declaration of Human Rights through the United Nations, and I would urge you to go to coastradio.org podcast and check out Michael McCusker's show, Story Told. He did a beautiful job, as ever, giving you some background and some foreground and some needs. And I want to send it out, especially a couple of those articles, because I've been hearing the news about the barbaric executions, murder by state, last night and upcoming, which is absolutely criminal in a lame duck time, and a border wall in Arizona, which will never be built, but which is tearing apart the land for the people who live there. There's so much work to be done, and we are the ones to do it. So lighting up the world, there's a Hasidic song, and it is Hanukkah. It started last night with one candle. The candles keep growing. The light keeps growing, and soon solstice, and the light will continue growing. So there is hope. A flicker of light can dispel a room full of darkness. To me, that's come to mean that the best way to fight evil is to concentrate on performing acts of kindness. And Peter Himmelman writes, on the deepest and most personal level, Hanukkah is a metaphor for the triumph of the spiritual over the material, and ultimately of love over all else. Well, that's a great introduction for my first guest. Florence Sage is here with me, and she has just published a book which is all about the light, the love, It's a family book. Hey, Florence, welcome.
Hi, Carol. Hi, Carol, and all you KMUN listeners.
Yeah. And tonight,
you're right about that.
Let's tell folks right away that tonight at 7 p.m., Florence will be reading, and you can go to Kala right on Marine Drive. Am I correct?
No.
We're not
having audience because COVID.
Okay.
We're doing it on Facebook only.
Okay.
On the Hipfish Monthly Facebook page. So go to Facebook and then look for Hipfish, search for Hipfish Monthly, and it's broadcast from there. So
okay.
It also will be up there for a while. So
good.
That gives more people a chance to actually see it.
Well,
we decided we were going to go live at Kala, and then nope.
Okay.
But I'll be live. I'll be reading from the Kala stage.
Okay, so you're going to be filming it or Zooming it or however, I don't even know the technique, but to get it on Facebook tonight.
It posts on the Facebook page.
But that's tonight. That's
tonight
when it
at
starts.
7 o'clock
okay.
is when it's
okay.
going to be.
But don't
up
go to Kala.
Time.
But
and
you'll
it,
recognize.
It will stay there as a video after that for a little while.
Right. And folks will recognize the background of Kala if they've ever been there. Kala is the performance space of Hipfish, our beloved Arts and Culture Monthly.
Yeah, you know how they'll know it's Kala? Because there's a pink spotlight.
Oh, that's
and my,
right.
So my white hair will be pink.
That's right.
They'll know I'm authentically there.
That's right. Pink spotlight and purple curtains or blue curtains.
With stars.
It's a beautiful, beautiful space. So this, first of all, Mazel Tov, congratulations on the new book.
Thank you.
And this, I understand this, the book, of course, being you, is written in narrative poems rather than prose. Can you tell us what does that mean? What's a narrative poem as opposed to what other kind of poem?
Well, first of all, it just came to me as poems because I'm a poet and
exactly.
I can't but write poetry.
Mm-hmm.
If I try to write prose, forget it. It's just so flat. So what I really like the discipline of poetry where you've got to hit something really nicely at the end of each phrase and each line, and, you know, you've got to keep the rhythm going and make it melodic. And, narrative poems tell a story. That is essentially what they are.
Ah, okay.
They tell a story, and there are reflections in the story, but it's telling a story.
Okay, so this has, when you say narrative poems, that says nothing about rhyming or not rhyming or any of that.
No.
It's just the fact that it advances the story. Okay,
there
and
is,
apropos
yeah.
of poetry versus prose, I read something you wrote, which I really liked, because I think for those of us who are not poets, it captures it. The soundscapes of poems, the rhythms, the echoes, the shifts of meaning, the half pauses at line breaks heighten and contain the stories. Especially
yeah.
that half pauses at line breaks. That really.
Yeah.
I get it.
You can't just break a line anywhere, you know, mm-hmm. on the page where it's convenient for the printing of it.
Mm-hmm.
You should
mm-hmm.
think of each line should have its own meaning. It should contain something, and then there's a little break. As you go on to the next line, you know, there's a little thought there, each line.
So Florence, mm-hmm. you taught at Clatsop Community College for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Did you teach poetry?
Not at all. I kept poetry for myself. No, I have the degrees to do it, but I taught psychology and philosophy mm-hmm. and addiction studies, which was very interesting. So that, you know, that was good.
So
and
when
I didn't start actually writing poetry until my mid-50s, which is 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's always been my private thing, except that I get up and read. You know, I don't keep it private after it's written.
Not even, and you don't even read most of the time. You recite, which blows everybody away because you can recite a 10-minute poem without looking at anything, and it's
I used to, but I don't make myself do that anymore.
Oh, good. Okay.
I'm happy if I can recite a few lines.
Okay, so...
But as I read, my old habit of memorizing helps me to not just look at the page all the time. I can look up at the audience and, you know, and keep going.
Which is great. Okay, so... but. I think you said you did have training in what, literature or creative writing or poetry?
No.
Nothing.
I had, literature, excuse me. My allergies are getting to me. I have two master's degrees, and I did all the coursework, but I didn't finish a doctorate in English language and literature at UBC.
Oh, okay. That's okay. We're
no
getting
good background
to that.
There.
We're getting to that. UBC, folks, for those of you who don't know, would be University of British Columbia.
Yeah.
And that's half of this story that Florence is going to tell us about. It's her family, Polish Canadian story. So it's very much a place and time.
Yes.
And you grew up in Hamilton, which is in Ontario.
Yeah, which is on the western tip of Lake Ontario.
Yeah, I spent time in Hamilton, actually.
You did?
I did, way back, 40 years
ago. Well, I won't ask you what you think of it because it's changed so much from when it was the steel center of Canada with three steel mills going. You know, that's when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
There were three steel mills going, and it was very much a lunch bucket town, blue collar. And now I just visit now and then. And I could ask you what you think of it, but it won't be the same thoughts as I would have.
Actually, I think I got there just about the time you were leaving. And I didn't spend, I just visited a friend there.
Okay. Yeah.
But I hadn't known it was on the map. So I read that you started thinking in 2018 that maybe you should write down some of these family stories that keep coming into your head. So tell us about the family, about the Polish-Canadian, how that impacted. The name of the book is The Man Who Whistled, The Woman Who Wished. I love that. That is so lyrical. I can just dance around the kitchen with that.
There we are, the poetry of it.
That's exactly right. So who are these people?
Well, the man who whistled was my father, who is a spirited man who lost his job at the steel mill in his late 30s, I think, and then had to become an entrepreneur and, you know, hustle to make a living for us all. And good thing he was such a positive person, and he loved whistling, everything from Fats Domino to Verdi.
Oh, wow.
And he just loved it, and when he was stressed, he'd whistle, you know, so we'd see him whistling a fair bit. And my mother was this garrulous woman who wished. She wished to fit in. She wished for belonging and peace and not to have to worry about money. And she wished for a night out for cards with her very busy husband. So that's how I saw them. And I actually can almost see them as in action when I think about them as if they're on a movie, in a movie.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, your description. Right. And did you have siblings?
I had a twin brother and a sister. And some of the stories relate to the fact that there were three of us born within a year.
What? Because of twin. Oh, my God.
Well, my sister.
Right.
And then 11 months later, two of us, my brother and I were born. And they didn't know I was coming because in the times there weren't any scans taken.
Right.
You know, it was just a doctor's stethoscope. And I guess, you know, one heart always lay over the other one, and they couldn't tell until I was born. And then it was, oh, here comes another one.
Wow. That's.
And there are some other poems about the times, like we didn't go to hospital for operations. We had a surgery on our beds once, and we had our tonsils out on the kitchen table. And, you know, there are going to be pieces like that. Or, you know, bits of
Now,
color.
Is that because of your particular family? Is that because of finances or your small town? Why is that? The idea of tonsils out on the kitchen table.
Well, it wasn't considered that big a deal, so they just did it on the kitchen table. Our family doctor did house calls. It was, you know, no big deal to them. Mm-hmm. And then they gave us each a popsicle for our throats, and that was it. But there was one surgery, and I write about this, where it was a great snowstorm in the early 40s, close to the mid-40s. And our doctor had to tromp down the street and do the surgery on the bed. It was abscesses that my brother and I both had. Mm-hmm. And the hospitals were full of returning soldiers, so there was no thought of taking us to the hospital at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I got he told us that I got the first treatment of penicillin ointment that was available to Canadians, to civilians at the time.
Wow.
I'm something of a piece of history.
This is, I'm telling you, this is your mark in history. Okay, what's the Polish-Canadian, and how did that impact this whole family story? Were your parents themselves immigrants?
No, my grandparents, all four of my grandparents came from Poland in between 1905 and, I think, 10. That's a long time ago. Yeah, and they were, Poland was occupied at the time, and often, but at the time, by Russia. And Poles were second-class citizens. They weren't allowed to go to school. They weren't supposed to read, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure the motivations. I'm sure it was an economic migration happening there. But four of my grandparents came when they were in their mid-teens. Mm-hmm. And the Skrenkovich family, the couple came together as a couple, and they went to Winnipeg, where there was a Polish community already set there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Okolaskis, my grandmother was a Pisarski, and then my grandfather John was John Okolaski, but they met in Montreal. My grandmother came through Ellis Island, but then she went to Montreal because her sister Rose was there in Montreal. And that's where she met the man who would become my grandfather, John Okolaski.
Great names you've got there, too. Good, solid Polish names.
Yeah, so, I somehow miss them. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, well, did your parents, so each of your parents grew up in a Polish-Canadian household?
Community, more or less.
Community. And did they actually
speak? Well, I guess more Skrenkoviches, my dad's side in Winnipeg, but my Okolaski side, those parents went to Black Lake, Quebec, which is in the southeast of Quebec, I can't remember what they call them right now, the lower part of Quebec, Eastern Townships, yeah. And they set up a mom-and-pop grocery, actually dry goods store, everything, you know, everything you'd need. There was a mine there, asbestos mine, Thetford Mines, in that area. And they moved to a little bigger town, Sherbrooke, I think it is, Quebec. But they were serving the mining community there. In fact, we found a chunk of asbestos in my grandmother's dresser drawer in the 50s. She kept a piece of asbestos.
Oh, no. Of course, she didn't realize that asbestos was killer, of course. Yeah.
Well, I think it was, if you didn't work with it, you know, if you kept it solid, I think it was a little better because it wasn't flaking.
Right, right. So did you, do you feel that your father's whistling and your mother's longing, did that have anything to do with their heritage, or was it really being Canadian?
Personality. My father was, you know, spirited, and I don't know, he just liked to do that. And my mother, yes, definitely, that she wanted to belong, yeah. And the first poem in the book is called Scrappy Pappy, and it tells the difference between my father, my lighthearted father and my mother, who's, you know, wishing she could be a little more uptown.
Mm-hmm. Is there one of the poems that you could read for us?
If you'd like me to read part of that one, I've accepted.
Sure.
And it's a minute and 40 seconds. I time everything.
Okay, that'll do, because we have about 4 minutes to go. So go ahead and let us hear.
So this is from the first poem. It's just the beginning. Scrappy Puppy. But it does give you the dynamic between my parents. That's why I put it first. It was not the first one I wrote, but I decided that needed to go first. My father brought home a new red truck one afternoon, often surprised our mother one way or another with something he'd bought without marital discussion. He had a good relationship with his credit union. The truck wasn't actually new or entirely red. Some red, some rust on the rounded feathers, fenders, a couple of dents. It was better than new. It was new to him and suitable for his rented orchards a few miles out after the day shift on machines. A bit weathered, set good and wide for crates and bushel baskets. Just right for a man who farms. As on both doors, a cartoon hillbilly in tricolor lacquer with the requisite shaggy white beard, overalls, corncob pipe, no kidding, clicked his heels for deep rural joy somewhere in America. Anathema to our mother. But Dad's eyes glinted behind his round wire-rimmed specs. A fine bargain and a pretty good joke. Underneath the old fellow, each door declared big and bold, Scrappy Pappy, since it had been a junk man's truck, which we'd now call recycling or reclamation or reuse. But our mother called, what will the neighbors think? We kids could have rooted for either side, so we didn't. And then it goes on.
Nice, nice. Yes, yes, definitely. So you did put the poems in chronological, more or less?
Yeah, they came to me however they wished to, but Scrappy Peppy, I think, was the third one that came into my mind. But except for that one, which is like establishing the dynamic and the scene, yes, then I put them as much as I could into chronology. Mm-hmm. I didn't write them that way. That's murder. You can't do that. You draw blanks. You can't just say, I'm going to write, you know, as it happened. I just wrote scenes, things that occurred to me.
And how many poems are there?
62.
Woo!
Yeah, I thought there'd be a few.
Oh, my goodness. So what years did you cover in this?
From 1939 was when my parents met at the Polish Hall in Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one that's called Here Comes Vic, and that was when my father first saw my mother in her traditional folk dance costume.
Oh, right.
And then goes all the way up to, my father's last years at 60, 61,
mm-hmm.
in the mid-70s.
Okay.
But it really focuses on me and them together, so most of it is when I lived with them.
Well, I'm very excited to read this. I love your poetry anyway, but this really appeals to me because of the family aspect and the whole idea of stories, narrative poems. And my guest, Florence Sage, the book has just been published and is available, will be available.
It's available now at River Sea Gallery in Astoria on Commercial.
Great. The Man Who Whistled, The Woman Who Wished. And the author is the daughter who watched them both and then wrote them down. And tonight at 7 p.m. is the first time you can watch Florence read some of the poetry on the Kala Facebook page, Hipfish.
Hipfish
Facebook. And Hipfish Monthly Facebook. And I hope you don't have to be a member of Facebook to access it.
No, it's open for public.
Wonderful. And then it will be up for
I don't know how long those things stay. It'll be up as a video following if you can't catch it tonight.
Okay. Wonderful.
And I would love, I'd be thrilled to think of all the people listening, so please do.
That's
like
fantastic.
It.
Thank you so much, Florence. This
Thank
is
you,
so
Carol.
Exciting.
Thank you, listeners.
Good for you. Okay. Take care. We'll see you soon.
See ya.
That's Florence Sage, and this is KMUN. Astoria, KTCB, Tillamook, Carol with Arts Live and Local from the parking lot. And we've got some music for you. I think you'll recognize it, and you might be wondering why. Let's hear it and see what you think. Yeah. Are you wondering, what are we doing with Handel? Well, that's the other Handel's oratorio. Everybody's waiting to hear Messiah, which we'll be talking about that next week with the North Coast Chorale. But this is Handel's oratorio, Judas Maccabeus, who is the main character in the Hanukkah story. And it's, of course, a fabulous piece of music. And I encourage you to have a listen. And by the way, some of the KMUN programmers, I'll let you know later, have programmed for Hanukkah. So I'm very appreciative of that. I think I've got another guest here. And that would be Andrew Tonry. Are you there?
I'm here, Carol. Happy Hanukkah.
Good. Thank you. Well, you are certainly lighting up the lights this weekend. Andrew is the program director and head honcho, basically, at the Tolovana Arts Colony, which is tolovanaartscolony.org. It was originally formed by our dear friends, the Reverend Billy Hultz and Uncle Michael Burgess. And Andrew's been there for how long?
This is our we're coming up on our fifth annual holiday bazaar, so probably about 5 years.
Okay, excellent. I'm so glad. Now, I didn't realize this was the fifth annual because I've gone down there for several of them at Tolovana Hall, which is right in Cannon Beach, 3779 South Hemlock. Is that still the address?
We're not going anywhere.
Okay. let me just warn you folks, find the place and you're in good shape. So Andrew's going to tell us what Tolovana Arts Colony, which is a fabulous organization, is doing this year for their Holiday Bazaar, which basically supports local makers, which means it supports the community, because this is all, and that's the larger community of our area. So can you tell us first, what is the mission of Tolovana Arts Colony?
We bring year-round classes, workshops, and cultural programming to residents and visitors of Cannon Beach. And that can be anything from concerts in the park to leather-making workshops to this bazaar we're offering to comedy festivals to anything people are interested in, we can help put together. We'll do it. We helped that with some Shakespeare in the Park this summer. I mean,
right.
You know, name it.
Do you have any classes going on now during the closures?
We don't have any classes on at the moment.
Okay. So this is the big one, the Holiday Bazaar. what are you doing? And then for those people who have never been, tell them, because the items that are marketed there are all locally made, but they're not just the things you expect to see at an arts slash crafts market.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's the fifth year, and you know, in the previous 4 years, we've had really great responses from the community and really great, you know, opportunities for artists to earn, especially, you know, during the holidays. And certainly we didn't want that to end or go away this year. So what we're doing is a mixed version of, we're going to do some, we're going to have the bazaar open to the public this weekend and next weekend from noon to 5, mm-hmm. and then by appointment throughout the week. But also this year we're adding an online component where you can shop safely online. You can get delivered, so you don't even have to be in Cannon Beach to be a part of this. But we can also do contactless delivery and all the things we've become so familiar with in this strange age.
So tell us now, the thing that always makes me chuckle is things like detergent or soaps. And I mean, I'm thinking, wait a minute. You don't usually see that as a handmade or locally made item. I don't know whether you have it this year, but it has been in the past. So what kinds of things are folks going to be able to see and enjoy at the market?
Well, you know, you're broadcasting from a parking lot, and I am speaking to you from a parking lot. I am watching folks unload their crafts right now into Tolovana Hall. There is a large Suburban filled with stained glass.
Oh.
Pieces that are being unloaded, and that includes everything from full-on windows to very, very fairly priced, I know we don't talk about price, ornaments, you know, big and small. We have, let's see, what else is in there? We have basket weavers in there. We have, I see a car now unloading some fine jewelry and fine art. But there's everything from, you know, clothing to... Sadly, we don't. The person who made the detergent got too busy with other work. But boy,
that was
made beautiful detergent. I miss it. We have people ask about it every year.
Well,
she's listening.
It was so unusual to come to a locally made fair and find something that, you know, you just don't expect to see there. But
that was a big gift giver for me and my family. I mm-hmm. gave a lot of those detergents that year.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have functional gifts to give. But I must say, most of the items, I got a lot of good things as gifts, too. Jewelry, earrings, and...
It's a mix between, you know, fine arts and then other functional things like candles and salves and, you know...
What kind of clothing, though?
Around the house.
You mentioned clothing?
Woven gloves and hats. This really fine wool work, actually, is mm-hmm. the clothing I'm speaking of.
And there will not be food, or there will be this year?
That's what we had to get rid of at the Friday night opening extravaganza. We can't party and feed people like we'd like to. But nonetheless, like it's still, you know, it still really is an important, you know, service to provide for the community. I got a message from one of our artists. We just wrote to say, you know, thank you for finding a way to do this because, mm-hmm. you know, she was involved with so many kinds of craft events throughout the season, and they've almost all been canceled. So, she was so happy that just there's something to show work. And,
right.
You know, I mean, it's going to be, you know, a different social experience, but nonetheless, you know,
can. But some of the artists will be there.
I don't know if they're going to be planning to, you know, stay the whole time. I don't know if that's...
I'm sure not the whole time.
To be honest.
Yeah, in and out.
Because they do, I mean, like, that's the first thing is really to, you know, make sure everybody is
safe
throughout this. Because if we don't have that...
Bottom line. Gee, did anybody make masks for sale?
Well, yeah, we've got masks. I'm wearing one of our homemade masks as we speak. From our weaver and board member Deb Carnes, who said to say she says hello.
Oh, great. Oh, great. So the Tolovana Arts Colony is very special to my heart, partly because of the founders and the original purpose, the reason they started the organization, because there are so many amazing artists in the Cannon Beach area, and it just seemed strange that, you know, nobody was teaching. And so they said, let's get all, you know, get these artists sharing their art. And when I say art, I mean everything from movement to making things to any kind of art.
I mean,
form.
We once did an event, The Art of the Automobile, and we toured a vintage collector's
wow.
museum-like garage. I mean, you're right. Our departed founder, Billy Holt, used to say, anything done well becomes art.
There you go. Absolutely. And so did you say that if someone, perhaps not at this time because of the closures, but if someone is interested in teaching a class or making an offering, you consider it. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So how do they get in touch?
They can email or call me. You can find all that information at tolovanaartscolony.org. And you can also find our online gallery there. It's not up yet. I should tell, you know, as we're receiving this art, I will be spending the rest of this evening photographing and posting it online.
Oh, so boy.
By tomorrow, a good portion of the art that we have in there. But, yeah.
So this is happening this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, from 12 to 5, live at the Tolovana mm-hmm. Hall, which is, again, 3779 South Hemlock in Cannon Beach. And then again next weekend, 12 to 5. And in between, people can contact you and go over by appointment. So if somebody feels too nervous to go when there might be other people, they can make an appointment to go on their own.
Yep. That'll just be, you know, there will be nobody else there except for myself or board member or volunteer, but yeah. So, and that's also too. We also want to just be available, and you know,
right.
it's for people who might be concerned
mm-hmm.
about the safety of it, but people who also just can't, you know, are busy this weekend.
Absolutely. And is everything going to be posted on the website?
Let's say the lion's share of it. You know, there's some
wow.
people who
okay.
make, you know. We have little ornaments and, you know, little pieces. I'm not going to put, you know,
every single
200
yeah.
pieces of right. similar jewelry on, but
right.
you'll get the full sampling. And, of
right.
course, all the, you know, all
so,
the big, unique stuff will be online.
Right. Oh, I can't wait to see it. This is Tolovana Arts Colony. Check it out, folks. And even if this is definitely fundraising also for the Tolovana Arts Colony, note the .org. This is a nonprofit
yeah.
that is beneficial to the entire community and the artists and
you know,
offers.
Carol, I just want to put this out there. I know that there's the Astoria at Home Market, so there's a similar one going
yes.
on.
Yes.
You know, you guys, but throughout, if people want to, if an artist finds they have some stuff to share, you know, we're going to be at this for 9 days. So you know, if you have something you want to exhibit. Get in touch.
That's great, because Astoria Home for the Holidays is happening tomorrow. So you're saying that perhaps after that, someone might want to get in touch with you and see if they
yeah,
can
if
join
they have,
your...
Yeah, find some extra,
that's
extra
great.
Stock. Maybe we can help.
Fantastic. I love the way we cooperate around here. Terrific. Thank you, Andrew. Andrew Tonry, my guest, my regular. He comes with music and fairs and classes, and I'm so glad you're still there, and especially that Tolovana Arts Colony is there to stand forth for Cannon Beach and the arts.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay.
It's an honor.
Take care. Thanks, Andrew.
Hi.
And we have some music coming up. This, too, it's called Ocho Candelicas. It's in Ladino, and a song written by Flora Yagoda, or Jagoda, and sung by Yasmin Levy. Ocho Candelicas, Eight Candles.
Hanukkah lindas taki Ocho candelas para mi Hanukkah lindas taki Ocho candelas para mi Una candelica, dos candelas Candelicas, cuatro candelicas, cinco candelicas, seis candelicas, siete candelicas, ocho candelicas para mí. Muchas fiestas voy a hacer con alegría. Muchas fiestas voy a hacer con alegría y placer. Una candelica, dos candelicas, tres candelicas, cuatro candelicas, cinco candelicas, seis candelicas, siete candelicas, ocho candelicas para mí.
Yeah, Ocho Candelicas. And actually, when Flora Jagoda sings it, you hear that it is not quite Spanish. It's Español Judeo, the language that was spoken and still is by some people and sung, the Jews who ended up in Spain and, of course, during the Inquisition, were eliminated from Spain. And they ended up in many other parts. I ran into some folks in southern Turkey who spoke the language. So, speaking of languages here on KMUN and KTCB, we have a friend of the station, used to be a programmer back in the day, local artist Roger Hayes. Hi, Roger.
Hey, Carol.
Hey. Hey. I never even thought of that. Hey, Hayes. Oh, dear.
No.
Anyway, sorry. I am very glad to have you here with us because you are opening a show tomorrow evening at the Astoria Visual Arts. And am I right? The name of it is Outside In? Is that really the name, or did I make that up?
No, that was like one draft version. I mean, I think I finally went with, actually kind of was kidding with Rebecca and came up with like Home Is Where the Art Is.
Okay.
So that was kind of fun too.
Yeah, right. Well, I wondered, because Outside In is the name of the clinic in Portland, which is a wonderful place, and I thought, oh, I wonder if you're related. But you are not doing this show by yourself, although you have had solo shows in various galleries over the years. But this one, you have a couple of folks whom you're featuring, and then a whole bunch of other artists as well. So I know you have Eric Conley and Clarence Larkins Jr., and then some of the other Beacon Clubhouse artists, and maybe more. So why don't you tell us what the show is about, who the artists are, and how this all came together.
Yeah, I didn't even really think I would do a show like this just because I didn't really have the context. I mean, I've had the context at different points in my life,
mm-hmm.
you know, like in particular working with other people who did, like, outsider art.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's not really something going on with me right now, but it's kind of like I'm kind of pulling a memory forward. And I just kind of had the opportunity of still having, you know, Astoria Visual Arts there and being invited to do that. It seemed like a good thing. At least, you know, Rebecca had kind of introduced the idea of doing this, so I hadn't really thought of it too much, but I had kind of had some access to folks who were, unschooled or maybe were in a highly transitional lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
and we've even done, like, a little bit of, like, art classes, like it was happening at the Warming Center, for example, too.
Hmm.
I think it was last summer. There were like three or four of us that kind of sat in. I only sat in once, but that was where I wanted to start. And because people were kind of doing really expressive things, and the Beacon Clubhouse had opened, you know, last year or no, earlier
October.
This year.
Yeah, this just recently,
Yeah. So it seemed like exact, like a good opportunity to try to get that going there.
So who are your artists? Tell us about, I met Clarence Larkins Jr., who I met him on the telephone, that is, in good Arts Live and Local from the parking lot style of these days.
Yeah.
And folks can find that interview by going to coastradio.org and checking out the Arts podcast of October 2nd. Because Clarence came in with Aaron Carlson. They had just opened the Beacon Clubhouse, which sounds like a fabulous, more than a drop-in center. And the arts just seems to have taken off there, and Clarence was one of the lead people. So we got to talk about what art has meant to him, but I've never met Eric. And I wonder if you can tell us a little about his, what he's doing in his art and why you're working with him.
Yeah, my original point of reference was when I had tried to interview folks I'd met on the street, and I had encountered him in different contexts, like as a musician and an artist and a person who was, you know, trying to subsist on the street and being very involved in the art, so he seemed like one of the prime candidates for this type of thing. And I feel like I've been really fortunate to have him and Clarence in the show because they both really, I didn't even have to say anything, and they're both kind of advocating ideas that I really kind of basically believe in about what, you know, your role as an artist and what the role of art. And they're really kind of outside the box, and they're both really kind of refreshing and thoughtful about what they're doing. And It's kind of made me just excited about the show, just having those two guys in the show, because they're really kind of, and I wouldn't even say they're even, like, challenging. They're just kind of like, that's how they are. You know, they're inquisitive, and they...
Can you give us some specifics when you say their attitude towards what art is, what the artist is, and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess that's kind of like a crisis of thought for myself, too, because I think there's just so much art and there's so much information. The field is really very leveled, and I think people who try to, and this is going to be a generalization from my thinking, but mm-hmm. you know, people who try to make it a hierarchical thing just aren't really kind of getting it, because there's just so much you can experience. So why deny yourself lots of good experiences with art?
Mm-hmm. And was Eric? I missed this because you did a wonderful interview with him. Is that available to the public?
Yeah, it's on my channel. My channel, I'll just plug my channel. It's called Loop Based Zero on YouTube.
Wait a second. How do you spell that? Loop?
Loop, L-O-O-P, based, like, you know, based, B-A-S-E-D,
uh-huh.
Zero, Z-E-R-O. And there's a lot of interviews I've done in Clatsop County with folks I met on the street.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done that in a while. I mean, I was kind of really felt like I need to kind of compile that in my head to see what it meant, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of gone on and did interviews with artists because, you know, the old, you know, artists are very thoughtful too. And but yeah, Eric definitely kind of bridged both. I mean, he's just an awful person, and he's got a lot of interesting things to say about both things.
Yeah, I watched that interview just the other day, and I was kind of blown away because it made me think about a lot of things. He's extremely articulate and philosophical and straightforward.
And he also talked about some difficult things that people may not want to talk about on different levels. I mean, one very obvious one is if you talk to people on the street, there's issues with people who are, say, travelers who confuse issues with our local people who are unhoused.
Mm-hmm.
But he was willing to talk about how he was perceived as a kind of an interloper and who maybe didn't belong. Like, he didn't really quite have a place in the homeless community.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was really kind of, I don't know, he just kind of had this experimental way of looking at a lot of different things going on in his life.
Mm-hmm. And he also talked about his family.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
very important for him, I think.
Yeah. So it was very real. I highly recommend for anyone, whether you're involved in people listening to this show probably care about the arts, but Eric had stuff to say about life. And just being alive and choosing, making choices and being judged and making judgments about others. I'm going to go back and watch it again. It was very enlightening, actually. So,
well,
so Eric and Clarence, and then how many folks are in the show? Now, some of your work is going to be in the show, too, right?
Well, my role was just to kind of, I was hoping, my goal was to auction some works that evening to raise extra money for the Beacon House Clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just why I'm there. I'm going to start a bid at $10 on a number of older paintings of mine. Hopefully I can raise some money for the clubhouse so they can keep doing their art program.
Now, does someone have to be at the, by the way, folks, the AVA Astoria Visual Arts Gallery is on the corner of 10th and Duane. It's in that beautiful blue building. So, and it's got the corner spot so you can see art all the way around. Does someone need to be there tomorrow night in order to take part in that?
Not necessarily. I mean, if you've seen, you can see, if we're talking about the auction pieces, you can see three of them on the wall at the very west end corner, southwest corner of the gallery. And you could bid on those if you wanted.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is the art going to be, or is the show going to be online at all? Do you know?
Well, I kind of did this other little project where I've interviewed the guys while they were making, especially Eric. I was kind of trying to follow what he was doing. Did some video on that and then kind of interlacing the current show and maybe the opening and just try to compile the process these artists were going through.
Mm-hmm. And that will be on your site or on AVA's site?
Well, I'll post it on my YouTube channel and then I'll link it to
AVA.
Yeah, AVA.
Okay. So thanks for reminding me. What did you say about art isn't always on the walls or even on pedestals, and something about an interactive piece? What was that about?
Well, he did do, there's two interactive pieces. I don't know how much I can say about this just in general, but he, let's say, Eric very much believes in taking art outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
If you can read into that, what you want to read into it. Mm-hmm. And he sees that as like a process where other people can participate. So it's never, and the cool thing about both these guys is they really believe that it's like a not finished process, like it's an always open-ended process.
Nice.
And, you know, that's why I like this idea that we talk about art as being a thing that you put on a wall and it's in a museum and it's done, you know?
Right. But this is live art. It's alive. Yeah. And of course, that's what it's about. That's why we all feel so alive when we're making art or looking at art or in some way engaged, whether it's any form of art for that matter, dance, music, etc. So, yeah. So this is, okay, so, and then you have how many other artists? Several others from Beacon Clubhouse?
I think I counted 8 altogether.
Okay. Okay. So the art is going to be tomorrow evening. Well, tomorrow during the day or?
Noon to 8, I believe.
Noon to 8, yeah. I keep forgetting. Art Walk is no longer just in the evening. Yeah. It's noon to 8 because you can't all crowd in the way we used to in the old days. And
no.
Will again, I'm sure. Although, personally, I prefer to look at art when there aren't so many people in the room. So you can go over there during the day and see Eric Conley and Clarence Larkins Jr. and maybe even Roger Hayes and then some of the other local artists and enjoy, support, and check out Loop Bass Zero. I'd never heard of that before, Roger. Thanks. I wrote it down now. We got it. Okay. Well, I'm going to tell folks about some of the other galleries that have art happening for the Art Walk. Anything else you want to tell us about this? Home is where the art is, outsider art, at the AstoriaVisualArts.org. Check out their website. It's full of good stuff. And, yeah, anything else you want to tell us?
Oh, thank you for doing this. Thanks for helping to promote everybody's art.
Absolutely. Every time. Thank you for making such good art. And thank you for working with people in our community. Take care.
Take care.
Okay. So, folks, what else is happening with the Art Walk? We've got lots of... I've got, like... 15 names here. Let me see if I can run off some of them. Art Total, You Are the Universe at 305 Alameda Park from 2 to 6. Lower Columbia Q Center featuring floral art by Franklin Brown, a certified master floral designer. Paul Polson Studio Gallery, paintings by Carrie Wilson. That's on 10th Street. Lower Columbia is 171 Lower Columbia Q Center, 171 West Bond Street. Paul Polson is 110th Street. And Carrie Wilson, Impressionism and Abstract Expressionism. Angie Wilt Gallery, 106 10th Street, presenting Ty McNeely, a U.S. Army officer and photographer. The Secret Gallery, 160 10th Street, that's the one in the back, Jill and Chris, featuring the gallery's new show, What Would Hieronymus Do?, with works by lots of folks. Oh, I can't wait to see it. West Coast Artisans Gallery, also 160 10th Street, on the street level. Astoria Institute of Music and Center for the Arts, 1159 Marine Drive, with local artists, pottery, and lots more. Imogen Gallery, featuring an exhibition of textile-based arts with Lam Kwang and Kestrel Gates and Julie Kern-Smith. And this is their annual fabulous. Celeste Olivares has her jewelry there. It's a fabulous show. Forsythia, showcasing jewelry on a commercial. Riversea Gallery. And let's see who they've got this time. Astoria Artist. Oh, Robert Pullman, whom we love and adore. And he's got his still life paintings and plein air landscapes and figurative works. And also A Faint Understanding by Portland artist Melissa Monroe. Jewelry by Tabor Porter. Oscar Demasi's studio and gallery, 1145 Commercial, with his work. Astoria Visual Arts, you just heard. Cambium Gallery, which is right next door to AVA, presenting Let Them See You, their gallery's first group show. Vaulted Gallery, 1389 Duane Street, with jewelry by Jen Crow and James Crow Landscape Photography, and Paper Noten, showcasing Astoria Home for the Holidays and an online community event from 10 a.m. to midnight. Local artists, makers, and goods from downtown shops will be featured. Folks, thanks so much for being here with me. This is Carol with Arts Live and Local, and you're listening to KMUN Astoria, 91.9 KTCB Tillamook, 89.5 coastradio.org. Wherever you are in the world, Squamish, we love you. Happy birthday to everybody. Happy Hanukkah, Sameach, and the solstice next week. Take care. Be well.